You're listening to the North American Francophone Podcast, hosted in English by Claire-Marie Brisson and proudly recorded in Charlottesville, Virginia. Welcome to the 13th episode of the North American Francophone Podcast. I'm your host, Claire-Marie Brisson, and if you noticed between episodes 12 and 13, there was a short hiatus, but it's good to be back. Today's episode really speaks to me both historically, but also with my familial relations. I will be interviewing with Jason Theriault, who's a Louisiana historian focusing on the Cajun Frenchies, a group of people who helped during the Second World War when French was a vital language to win on the Allied side. Those who were growing up in South Louisiana in the early 20th century had been told not to speak French in their classrooms, and yet once they arrived in the battlefields of France, they realized very quickly that this could be an asset for them as well as for the American army. But what was surprising to me about this story is that nickname, Frenchy, was also used with my own grandfather. My grandfather was in the Canadian Army first, and then was enlisted to help with the American Army for the same reason as the Cajun Frenchies. I knew that there had to be some connection between the two sides, but I wasn't sure how. I came across an interview with a retired Army Brigadier General, Robert Leblanc, who was one of the Frenchies, and this was posted by Fox 8, a local TV channel in Louisiana. He said, quote, "Frenchy was the person who could talk to the French people and get something done." Some of those bilingual Cajun soldiers faced lots of hardships in the American Army, as you can imagine, but they were the ones who bridged those connections between the French speakers and the Cajun French people who had been neglected in Louisiana for so long. I know in the case of my own grandfather, he felt a revitalized connection to his Frenchness when he was able to go over to France. He said that speaking the language with the people that he was helping to liberate was one of the best things that could ever have happened to him. Jason Theriault has been working for about 20 years researching the Cajun speakers, and his new book will document the role of French-speaking Cajuns of World War II. With their bilingual skills, these young Cajuns from South Louisiana served as translators and interpreters, and they proved to be an invaluable asset to the military overseas. Their wartime experiences forged a renewed sense of pride in their culture and heritage, and they would bring that back to Louisiana with them after the war. You can find out more about Jason's work on jasontheriault.com, but let's go to the interview so you can hear firsthand how his work has been impacting North American Francophone history and also what we know about World War II. Joining us today is Jason P. Theriault, an independent historian who does historical research on the Second World War and also has a consulting business. He's recently started a project entitled Frenchy, the Story of French-Speaking Cajuns of World War II. Jason, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, Claire-Marie, it's great to be with you and your listeners. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, first things first, what inspired you to start this research? It's the first time I've ever seen anyone talking about French-speaking Cajuns, particularly during the Second World War. So how did this come about?
Well, Claire, it goes back to almost 20 years ago when I started interviewing World War II veterans from Acadiana in South Louisiana. And after 5 years and 100 interviews or so, I wrote a 3-volume book series called To Honor Our Veterans on their experiences. And from that 5-year project, I discovered there was this group of Cajuns who were nicknamed Frenchy by their comrades, and these Cajuns had utilized their bilingual skills in either official or unofficial roles in the military service. And pursuant to that, I went to graduate school and wrote a master's thesis specifically on these Frenchy guys and found some rare letters that had not been mined before. And the letters corresponded to the interviews that I had done, whereby during wartime, these veterans, these GIs, these 20-year-old Cajun Frenchies were writing letters back home to their mom and dad saying, "Mom, Dad, I want to thank you for teaching me that French language that I was told to forget by my teachers. It has become a valuable asset to me and my colonel, who I'm driving around in a Jeep every day in France." And so it became obvious to me that something different happened to this particular group of Cajuns, something very unique and transformative. And fast forward 15 years later, I was asked to go to the Congrès Mondial Acadien in August of 2019 by a dear friend of mine. And she said, "Jason, I want you to come up there and tell all these people about the Cajun Frenchies from World War II. And so I did that. And it was an overwhelming response from not only the Acadian cousins up there, but also from quite a few Cajun people from South Louisiana who had gone up for the celebration and had never heard of this before, including people who you would think should know, like folks from the Lieutenant Governor's office who are in charge of tourism, and folks from CODAFIL, the Council on Development of French in Louisiana, sort of the go-to organization for French immersion in Louisiana, an organization that was started almost 40 years ago. And so all the stars were kind of aligned. Claire Marie and I decided I'm going to give it a run, and I'm going to try to find the last remaining Frenchies. I'm going to try to find every letter that I possibly can. And that's sort of where we are today, 6 months, 9 months later.
Wow, the inspiration you get from this project is really palpable. And, you know, I'm wondering, is there a memorable letter or maybe a memorable interview with a Cajun-American veteran that you could share with me and also with the listeners?
Years ago, I interviewed a fellow by the name of Bernice Lejeune, and he was from Church Point, Louisiana. And Bernice Lejeune had volunteered for the Army in 1942. And while he was being interviewed, he was asked if he had any particular skills, which is not uncommon. Most guys would say that they were worked on farming equipment, for example, or they were bakers. Maybe their parents owned a bakery shop. But he told this interviewer, this Army recruit, that he spoke two languages. And when the Army recruiter asked him what other language, he said Cajun French. And the recruiting American officer said, "Oh, the Army has no use for that type of French." And so Bernice Lejeune went on to into training, into basic training, and became a member of an anti-aircraft unit. Fast forward a year and a half later, as the military works, someone in the higher-ups got the information that this Cajun from South Louisiana was a French Cajun who spoke a second language, and he was actually pulled from his unit, reassigned, and sent to North Africa to ride around in a Jeep with a high-up military official in order to liaisons with the French people and the French resistance forces and the locals in Oran, North Africa. And so to me, it was a sort of a fascinating turn of events where, on the one hand, these Cajuns had been told for much of their young lives now, up in the 1930s and into the early 40s, that this French language was a bastardized French. It was a low-class language. And even the schools in South Louisiana punished children for not being able to speak English in school, even though French was their first language. And even once they entered the military, to some extent, their language was looked down upon. And lo and behold, this French language ultimately became a valuable asset to the military commanders in the field.
That's an incredible story. And, you know, you can almost imagine that there was a moment when the Cajun French speakers met the France French speakers for the first time. And I'm envisioning how exciting or maybe even confusing that may have been for those in France. You know, wow, there are American GIs who speak French. They didn't grow up in France, but here they are. Do you happen to know if there is any testimony or record of how these French-speaking North Americans were received or even perceived in France? Were they surprised? Were they curious?
Claire Marie, there's numerous stories such as this. There's hundreds of interviews that we have recently located in the last 6 months. There's interviews that I had acquired some years ago. There's letters. There's plenty enough testimony to go along to support that. In fact, many of the French farmers in the areas of Normandy and in Brittany, France, sort of in the countryside, they were shocked to not only find American soldiers who could speak French, but American soldiers who could speak the ancient French, the old patois of the French countryside peasants. As your listeners well know, the Acadian people who were ultimately became the Cajuns in South Louisiana, they left from these areas of France 400 years ago and settled in the Canadian provinces of New Brunswick and in what ultimately became Nova Scotia. And that language, that particular rural countryside patois, survived all those years. It survived the expulsion of the Acadians from their homelands in Canada all the way down through the eastern seaboard and even into Caribbean islands and ultimately into South Louisiana, where the Acadians became, as you know, the Cajuns. And so 400 years later, as the Acadian Cajuns arrived back in their original homeland, the local folks could not believe that the particular patois, the particular accent from these South Louisiana veterans was so special and so unique. And of course, they embraced them.
It's a beautiful, almost reuniting story that across the Atlantic, these two groups of French-speaking peoples eventually meet, and one group, the French, are liberated from occupation thanks to the efforts of the Allied forces and of these American soldiers, Cajun-American soldiers who spoke French. And you know, your story was particularly touching to me because my own grandfather was in the Canadian Army at the same time. He was a Quebecois, he spoke French as his first language, and once Ernest Brisson made his way across the Atlantic, he came into contact with British and American soldiers, as well as other Canadians, who just couldn't speak French. And it was at this moment that they had realized that they had to prioritize their French speakers, and so he was brought in even to help with the American Army. And I think that this story is very little known about these North American Francophones in general, whether they were in the Canadian Army or the American Army. I'm not sure if other armies as well had these Francophones. But, you know, this is something that I personally research as I'm finishing up my doctorate, and I look forward to contributing to this area in the future, as well as connecting with historians like yourself. So have you encountered connections between Cajuns and Canadians in your own research, or has that not really appeared?
I have not, but I can only imagine there are as many of those stories about the Canadian soldiers, the Frenchy Canadians, as there are of the Frenchy Cajuns. There is at least one number that estimates about 25,000 native-born Cajuns served in World War II. Now, if we break that down and we look at areas like the campaign in North Africa, and certainly the retaking of the European continent beginning in June of 44 with the invasion of Normandy and on and through France and southern France areas, my guess on the back of an envelope is somewhere around maybe 20% of those Cajuns served in those campaign areas. And almost all of them spoke French as their first language and only learned English in grammar school, some of them even later than that. We have a few references to these Cajuns who were born in way, way deep south down the bayou, who did not even know English until they got into basic training at 18, 19 years old. Can you believe that?
It's really funny that you say that. My grandfather, even though he grew up in Quebec and was exposed to some English in his schooling, he really started learning because of his work in the American Army and with the American Army. In fact, there's a comical story where my grandfather started learning better English in the American Army by sitting in on Army French language courses. So he was learning the vocabulary in reverse. And aside from supporting the Army with their language skills, I'm wondering, what were some of the things that Frenchies were trained to do in the military? You know, did they work in certain types of operations, or did they help with intelligence work? I'm very curious.
You're right on the money, Claire Marie. There were really two different areas. In one sense, the Frenchy Cajuns served in these unofficial capacities, where they had joined a particular unit and had gone to basic training with their comrades, their brothers at arms. And in some sense, their training extended into other areas in the United States. Obviously, at some point, they all had to leave America and head off to Europe, into the European theater or into the Mediterranean theater. And so they stayed with these guys for months, if not a few years. So they got to know each other. Their comrades who were from all other parts of the United States knew that these guys were Frenchy Cajuns. They could hear their accent. They could read the letters from home. And so they got to know each other. And so once these guys landed on shore in North Africa or in France or even places like New Caledonia in the Pacific, which was a strictly French colony, French-speaking colony, their comrades and their lieutenants knew that these guys had bilingual skills. And so when it was critical, at that critical impasse where there was a French farmer who had intelligence on where the German peel box was located up above a hill, the lieutenant for the company would call up, "Frenchy, bring Frenchy up here." And Frenchy would come up, and who was Frenchy? The little Cajun boy from somewhere in South Louisiana. "Yes, sir. What can I do?" "Frenchy, we need you to talk to this French farmer and find out where the German enemy position is located." And that's when the communication would take place. And that was the role of Frenchy in World War II.
Fascinating. And you can hear from your story just how that would have sounded like. I think that the listeners almost can see themselves there in the scene. And do you think that there were maybe any Cajun soldiers who went behind enemy lines and pretended to be French? Was that a possibility?
So there was a whole nother group of Cajun Frenchies who served in official capacities. These would have been guys who would have been recruited specifically in intelligence sections at headquarter units of certain army groups. These would have been the guys who would have been answering the phones, communicating to the forward lines and the backward lines. They would have been looking at mail. They would have been censoring mail coming out of from the French people in North Africa or in France. And so these would have been the roles that they would have served. They would have also served as official interpreters for higher ranking commanders like Bernice Lejeune, Private Bernice Lejeune. And yes, in fact, there were a few dozen Cajun GIs who were recruited by Special Forces Unit known back then as the Office of Strategic Services, the OSS. This was the predecessor to today's CIA. And this was a unit that was created in 1940, specifically to find bilingual Americans, train them in special forces in clandestine activities, and teach them to become paratroopers and to paratroop and to paratroop behind enemy lines after D-Day, beginning in around mid-June of 1944 and throughout the rest of the fall in 1944. And their specific mission was to rendezvous with the French resistance forces, the Maquis, and to coordinate activities between the Maquis and the American forces that are coming ashore. And so these guys played very important roles. They were highly trained, highly sophisticated, highly intelligent Frenchies. And so if you look at the total resume of the Frenchy Cajuns, it's no doubt that they played a major role, and one that has only recently been discovered and been recognized. And the next question is, Claire Marie, is what impact did this have on them, especially when they came home from the war?
Yes, and you know, I'm wondering as well how these soldiers in turn transformed Louisiana when they came home. Did the perspectives brought back to the U.S. by the Cajun Frenchy soldiers change the way history unfolded in the post-war years?
I think it is. I think that the roots of the Cajun cultural revival that we all recognize begins sometime in the 1960s has its origination with these Cajun Frenchy soldiers. I have acquired letters, hundreds of letters, from that particular time period where these French GIs, these French Cajun GIs are writing letters home, and they're talking about the benefit of their Cajun French language and how they're proud of their culture. This is something new. This is something that scholars have not focused on simply because information has not been available. But certainly something different happened to this group. I think that for the first time, they recognized their unique cultural differences, and they began to have pride in themselves and to recognize a Cajun identity, perhaps for the first time.
Speaking about Louisiana, I'm thinking about the National World War II Museum in New Orleans. Do any of the displays feature these Frenchies at this point?
They do not. The mission of the World War II Museum, the National World War II Museum, is much broader than just Louisiana. There is a Louisiana exhibit, but I'm going to do my best, Claire Marie, of over the course of the months and the years as this book project comes to fruition, to reemphasize to the higher-ups there that there was this unique group of homegrown French speakers right there in Louisiana. I think it's time that they be recognized, at least while there's a handful of them still living.
I entirely agree, and I hope that your research actually helps bring these Frenchies to the fore. They need to have a voice in that museum, but also in history in general. And I heard that you said that a handful of them are still living. Have you had the chance to meet with some of these Frenchies in person recently? Now, I know a lot of the research you've done has spanned around 20 years at this point, and you've had some incredible in-person interviews in the past. Are those interviews still possible today?
Yes, indeed they are. I've had the pleasure of interviewing about six of them over the last 3 or 4 months, one of whom is a dear good friend of mine, 98-year-old retired Brigadier General Robert LeBlanc from Abbeville, Louisiana. He's been awarded just about every award you could possibly think of. Bob LeBlanc was recruited by the OSS in 1942 and came ashore in France with General Patton's army in 1944. And his primary responsibility was to communicate in the front lines with the French resistance forces. I've interviewed him several times. The last time I visited him, I actually brought over my 11-year-old daughter, who pulled out a tape recorder and began recording with this legendary World War II veteran 15 years after I first interviewed him. So it was quite a treat for everyone in the Theriault family and the LeBlanc family. And he's certainly deserving of all the accolades, and he's one of a kind.
And that testimony that you're collecting is essential to how this history is preserved and eventually taught in the future when these voices are unfortunately silenced. I'm sure a lot of people who are listening in and are interested in history or maybe even work as historians themselves will want to experience these audio recordings and see the handwritten letters from these soldiers that you were mentioning. Hopefully there will be some of these supplements available once you publish your book. But in the meantime, is there a way for those listening right now to connect with you if they're interested in learning more or even if they're just going to follow your project?
Yes, I have a website, jasontheriault.com, that has several video presentations that I have collected over the years from giving talks and presentations about these Cajun soldiers. And several of those clips are available online, including the one with my daughter, by the way, and General LeBlanc. And as this project unfolds, there's going to be more information becoming available. I am working closely in partnership with the Center for Louisiana Studies at the University of Louisiana in Lafayette, where all of my oral histories have been digitized and are archived there. And we're working on a couple of different projects, including our own podcast. So that might be something that your listeners might want to check out here in the months and years ahead, since we have all this wonderful archival audio footage of these Cajun Frenchies. Why not share it with the rest of the world?
I think that you taking on this project and sharing it with the rest of the world is going to have an incredible impact, as it has already had on me, and I'm sure on my listeners as well. Thank you so much again for joining us today on this podcast, Jason. I look forward to following you and your endeavors in the future.
Thank you, Claire Marie. It's been a real joy.